Welcome to the Wizards of Dapps podcast, where we interview the creators of various decentralized applications in the Web3 ecosystem. We learn about how they are built and the insights that come from shipping. And we're your co-hosts. I'm Peter.
And I'm Bethany.
This week, we talk to Robert Leshner of Compound Finance. We go into his background, where he started back in 2011, building his first company. How he managed to crash a barbecue and pitch a VC his idea to only get into 500 startups. We talk about his early visions of Compound Finance and what it means to establish community governance. We obviously talk about, you know, the ethics of building financial infrastructure and software in this space and how most founders kind of don't yet have grasped the implications of what that means. We also talk about the modern day memes of yield farming and, you know, what that entails for the incoming, you know, Ethereum ecosystem. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast. We are supported again by 1KX Capital. They're proud partners and been day one supporters of the production of this podcast. Thank you. Hi, Rob. How's it going?
It's going great.
Thanks for being on the podcast. Well, I was trying to do some research on you, right? I listened to a handful of other podcasts. And whenever like they ask you, like, what's your background? You always kind of skimmed over it. You're kind of like, oh, I had an operator background, PM path. You kind of never went deep into it. I dug around and I found some interesting things about how like you Leroy Jenkins, you know, Dave McCure of 500 startups, like way back, right? And you wrote a little blog post that talked about like that experience. But even before then, you know, I'd love to learn about like, what's your background? What did you study like during college?
Yeah, great question. So I actually went to two colleges with two different majors. I started by studying what I thought I would enjoy, which was computer engineering, and very quickly realized I actually hated computer engineering. Assembly whooped my ass in like, you know, 2 weeks flat. And I decided I wanted to study economics just because I, you know, big picture, I was really into business. I was really into like high level ideas. And so I wound up switching universities and majors, and I wound up studying economics. And I kind of fell in love with it. It's something that lets you understand the world from financial perspective and a mathematical perspective. And I felt like it made a lot of different topics make a lot of sense when viewed from that lens. And that's always been sort of one of the ways that I like sort of look at the world first and foremost. And it's cool because in crypto, almost everything we're doing now is based on economics one way or another, whether we're reinventing it from the ground up or we're applying some ideas that have been discovered, you know, a really long time ago.
Yeah. So when was it when you met Jeff Hayes? You know, I remember like you writing somewhere that like he was your roommate back then.
So the co-founder of Compound, Jeff, has been a friend and collaborator for a really long time, probably about 14 years now. We met in college and stayed in touch and actually started our first company together a few years after college.
Tax Labs.
Yeah. Well, there was a couple different like names and ideas.
Technically.
Yeah. But like, we were basically, we started hacking on different software projects around 2011.
There's this like blog post that kind of recounts the early stories of like, you know, Safe Shepherd, but it was a company that was originally called Melancard, right? And it focused on like helping people take off, you know, kind of scrape the web for their own personal privacy, their own data off the web internet. And I just found that as a really interesting data point because, you know, I actually noticed that a lot of people who were early into Bitcoin and, you know, blockchains in general, right, all kind of came through this gateway of like exploring like the implications of privacy. You know, I talked to Kenny Rowe this week earlier to do a podcast and, you know, fascinating enough, you know, he was working on e-commerce sites and he was like, wait, you know, but what about the privacy of all this marketing, you know, analytics, you know, that we're collecting, right? So you're working with like, I guess you knew Jeff back during college, I guess, you know, what brought you, you know, back during 2011, back together to kind of work on something? What was the tech and startup ecosystem back then? You know, that was when like, you know, incubators were just getting off the ground, you know, YC was like created in 2009 and they had like the first couple of years of like glimmers of success, right? And you know, it was still kind of ambiguous back then to whether this like social would be a thing. Yeah, it was a completely different world back then. So like what got you back together building, living and working out of like this loft that you rented out?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So in 2011, Jeff was moving back from, you know, taking a little over a year backpacking throughout Asia. And I said, oh, well, you know, you can come, you know, stay at my place. Rather than like polishing your resume and looking for jobs, you know, from your parents' house, just like, you know, I have a guest room, like go move in there. And very quickly, we realized it was fun on like nights and weekends to sort of like hack on early, you know, software ideas. You know, back then it was like Ruby on Rails. It was like 2011. It was like, you can build anything in like 4 days time. You know, it's not going to be extremely polished or extremely successful, but like you can build a web application to do anything you want. And, you know, it was a relatively different era. You know, there was a lot of, I guess you could call it like rapid iteration and experimentation in like the web stack. We just kept on like, you know, trying out different ideas and for short amounts of time. And as you brought up before, one of the things that like, you know, essentially stuck for us is at a certain point, we decided to see if we could automate the process using software of removing yourself from search results and databases and like people search websites on the internet. And it was really a process of like scraping and automating terms of service of websites where it was like, you know, you built a crawler and it would like go over all the different like websites that like had your information. It'd be like, oh, you know, we found Robert or like we found Kevin, you know, and submitting requests to like remove yourself from these websites and databases and results. And we found some like very early signs of like product market fit with that. We joined an accelerator called 500 Startups, as you mentioned before, that we sort of had to like, you know, force our way into.
Yeah. Do you want to share, you know, how you ended up in the 500 Startups accelerator?
Yeah. So hopefully this lesson can be applicable for anyone who, you know, wants to break into like, you know, the venture-backed startup world, but you have to sort of seize an opportunity however you see fit. At the time we were living in Chicago, we knew not a single person in like the investing venture capital landscape. We had no idea how to raise money. All we knew is that our savings were depleting, you know, by the week. And, you know, at the time, like, you know, we've read a lot of TechCrunch and we really didn't know how the world operated. But we did know that venture capitalists were people that had money and would give you money if you had a good idea. And we thought we had a good idea. So I was sitting on Twitter one day, and back then I didn't really tweet too much and I still don't tweet too much, but I was sitting on Twitter and I saw that there was a venture capitalist who had connected his Twitter to his Foursquare and it had like auto-tweeted that he was like two blocks away at like a barbecue restaurant. And, you know, I turned to Jeff, my co-founder, I said, well, like, let's get our shoes on. Like, let's go to this barbecue restaurant and pitch a VC, you know? We didn't know that that's not how you're supposed to like meet a VC, is to like stalk them and show up at like a restaurant and like pitch them, right? But that's exactly what we did. And so we, you know, we showed up at this like barbecue joint and we were like, you know, hello, sir, we're here to pitch you. And, you know, this was like extremely amusing to this investor. And, you know, there was a bunch of other investors there. And he was like, all right, everyone, shut up for a second. Gather around. These guys are going to pitch me. And so we didn't know that this was or wasn't the process. You know, we just went for it. And, you know, we explained, you know, that we were building privacy software and, you know, what it did and how it worked and where we thought it could go and how big we thought the opportunity was. And he said, well, this is great. You know, I have an accelerator in California. Do you guys want to move out there in like a couple weeks? And we did. We packed up our car from Chicago, moved to Mountain View, California, and never looked back.
That's crazy. Yeah. I stumbled across that just on your Twitter, like, you know, and I was like, the link was broken. It was like a blog post on Safe Shepherd. Yeah, that was down. And I was like, let me like pull up the internet archive.
Awesome.
You know, and I'm like, you know, let's see what's in here. And I was like, oh, this is crazy.
That's great sleuthing. If you want to like point to that internet archive link and like tweet it out or something, that's really cool.
I like sleuthing, I guess. You know, fun fact, when I was younger, I used to dox people online who I played video games on. Just like great at scraping the internet data.
Yeah. PSA to everyone listening, do not dox people. I think in the modern era, it's super uncool. Different world back then. Don't do it anymore.
Yeah. Thanks for the PSA.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like video game drama, but of course. One other thing I noticed was like, you know, Compound's Twitter was like registered in 2011. And like, it was also like the same year you opened up your own personal Twitter. Any coincidences, or am I like just looking into this a tad too far?
I don't think there's too many coincidences. I think I recycled a Twitter address I created in 2011. I think I recycled a username I had registered back then when creating the Compound Twitter, just because I think it had like the seven friends who like had followed me in 2011 already. And I was like, oh, if you're going to start a new Twitter, start off with seven followers.
Yeah. Okay. Conspiracy theory scrapped.
No, I'm not Satoshi. I wasn't like super far back in 2011 thinking that Compound would exist. And I'm registering a Twitter handle for Compound, like before Ethereum, before DeFi.
Of course. Just like foreseeing everything. You had this like, you know, 10-year vision. And you were like, I'm going to create it, but I got to do all the shit first.
No one's that good. No one's even close
to
that.
No, no. I wanted to like bring that up because I was just like, you know, I felt it was like really cool to see like where you began, right? And just like how everyone in crypto kind of first started their first project and, you know, got going. With Compound, I think like the interesting thing about Compound was that, you know, again, like I think the community within the Ethereum community like didn't really take too much notice of Compound until like, you know, early 2019 or late 2018, right? Like almost a year and a half into the project. Just like looking over the podcasts throughout the years you've done, it's like you've been very deliberate on how you've wanted to build the project from the very start. Like you've been very, actually surprisingly, you know, very consistent, focusing on moving very deliberately. Like you've only like released three versions of Compound, V0, that was like just like scrappily put together, and then V1, right? 2018, and then like, you know, more recently, V2. I guess it's like, if you were to start the project all over again, what would you do differently?
That's a great question. So we have been extremely deliberate for many years now. This is my third venture. One of the things that I've sort of learned over the years and that I really, you know, appreciate and I think is like helpful is to have a very narrow vision and to work backwards from it. You know, it's almost impossible to achieve your vision in like 3 weeks or like 3 months. And for me, I find like the process to work very well when you start off by saying, this is what it's going to be, but like what's actually achievable now? What's actually achievable in a year and what's actually achievable in 3 years? So we're coming up to the point now where the vision that we set out with at Compound is sort of being realized, where for years we've talked about like, oh, we'll have a interest rate market or money market protocol that's upgradable by the community that can run forever, that doesn't really need humans, you know, to be there for the system to work. And this idea was like pretty much impossible in 2018, right? Like it was almost inconceivable. You know, we started in 2017. It was like, well, we know that smart contracts sort of work. You know, what's achievable today? And it's taken like almost 3 years now of just like building, polishing, refining, simplifying to get to what we have. And we just haven't like lost focus at all. Like we've just been working on this one very specific path. And we're finally getting to the point now where I feel like we're finally achieving what we set out to do 3 years ago.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah, that was a weird data point. Compound raised a very large seed round, you know, in 2018, right? It's not the typical like small seed, you know, of one or two couple million dollars, right? You raised, you know, Compound as a project raised $8 million. And, you know, from several like highly, I guess, respected, you know, Silicon Valley investors, right? Almost tracing back, right? What sort of vision did you have for Compound from the very beginning, you know? And why did you deliberately, you know, set out to raise that level of capital from the beginning, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question. So day zero, the vision is that Compound would be a full stack product that was both a market for interest rates on different crypto assets and the exclusive interface for it. So imagine if like Argent and Compound were like the same product, full stack, end to end. And that was our original vision. And we set out very early on to build what actually amounted to be a mobile app with, you know, a money market underneath of it. And we thought that like all users would like use our system through this mobile app. But at a certain point while building it, I had this like lightning bolt. And this is like, you know, the early visions of like DeFi and composability. And it was like, well, if we're building these smart contracts that are like open, why close them off to just our interface? Like, why not allow any other interface or smart contract to interact with these as well. Like, you know, maybe all of this will be like 10 times better if there's like 10 times as many things able to interact with these markets. And like sometime around like our like early R&D efforts, V0, before we like raised money, you know, we had this like realization that we were like, well, maybe we can scrap the mobile app. Maybe we'll move faster, farther if we're like building just one thing, just the smart contracts for this interest rate protocol. And that's it. Not worry about building a mobile app and having like key management on a phone and like all these crazy things that are like are in and of themselves extremely hard to build, and simplify it down and just be a protocol. And that was the vision that we pitched when we started to raise money. We hadn't yet launched Compound to the world. We had like this like working prototype of smart contracts on Ethereum that created an interest rate that took months of like R&D to like get to, you know, what looked and would become very similar to Compound V1, but it was just a prototype. It was completely unsafe because it was not audited. It was just for our team to prove out the concepts, but it was a set of smart contracts, an extremely bad Web3 interface on top that was super ugly that no one's ever really seen. And we said like, well, this is what the protocol is going to be. This is like what like the markets will be. Look, there's an interest rate. And as more people borrow, the interest rate goes up. And if more people supply assets, the interest rate goes down. And it worked. Like you could actually like bring a MetaMask account and interact with it. It was pretty janky, but like it functioned with the same principles that Compound has today. And we took that and we went out to investors and we said, this is like the first step in something much bigger. And the pitch was actually extremely simple. It was really a thesis that I had, which was, you know, as of early 2018, all of the crypto assets that were existing, there was Bitcoin and there was Ether and there was a bunch of altcoins and there was 100,000 scammy ICO projects. And I said, all of these assets are stupid. And, you know, side note, I'm kind of a Bitcoin minimalist in a lot of ways and an Ether minimalist. You know, I was like, all of these assets are silly. Like one day, every financial asset is going to be on a blockchain. Every stock, every bond, every currency, all of the real world assets are going to be issued on some blockchain. And if this market, Compound V0, works for these silly assets and like the tokens at the time, it was most of them aren't even around, like all of 3 years later. But I was like, if Compound V0 works for these assets, imagine this working for stocks and bonds and like real world currencies. And that was the pitch. And, you know, I basically said, I have no idea how big it'll get or when it'll happen. We need a lot of money to stay alive for as long as it takes real world assets to come onto a blockchain. And I told investors, I was like, listen, we're not going to spend it all in 1 year. We're going to spend like a little bit over a couple of years until like, you know, this looks like it's going to work. And that was why we raised so much money for what was at the time like a 6-person company, very scrappy with an unlaunched product. And we took that and we built the very first like production ready version of Compound. And, you know, in my mind, it sort of like taught us the right way to like build and launch a financial application, which was, you know, we built a prototype that wasn't meant for release to users, that tested the economic concepts, that tested the functionality, that had pretty much the same like spec and ABI of what we wanted. And then we rebuilt it from the ground up with an eye towards like simplicity and safety of the actual engineering. And we basically threw everything out and used it as like a learning experience and a foundation for Compound V1. We rebuilt it all. You know, we focused on getting out something that like we felt was like secure and like fully audited and ready for prime time. The whole process took about 5 months. You know, we sort of ended work on V0 as soon as we raised money and started work on V1 from April to September of 2018. And it was very similar in a lot of ways, but it was the first like production ready system. And Compound V1, this is what most people don't remember. There was no stablecoin. Our thesis at the time was, oh yeah, this is just for crypto assets. The first assets, it was Ether, Basic Attention Token, Augur, and 0x. There was like 4 assets and that was Compound. And you could borrow and supply any of those 4 assets. And that's how we like started.
It makes a ton of sense. It's like, we have no clue, you know, on how long this is going to take, but you know, hey, we think it's going to be a long-term, you know, commitment. One of the things you touched upon was really composability. It's big, you know, I think it's a key advantage of Web3 itself against like incumbent, you know, systems. that use a closed-off walled garden ecosystem. But everyone talks about it, but you know, you rarely see companies committing to that vision. In mid-2019, Dharma was one of the first projects, that larger projects or more prominent ones in the ecosystem that kind of said like, fuck it. Like, hey, like, you know, what are our strengths? Our strengths are in UX, product design, community building, other areas, right? Not necessarily, say, protocol engineering. Let's like move up the stack. Let's entirely build on top of existing protocols like Compound. Was that orchestrated on your end? Did they do any sort of due diligence process, or did they just say like, screw it, we looked at the code, it seems sound, let's jump on it?
Yeah, it's kind of the same realization we had when we were building Compound V0. Originally, we thought we were going to do everything. We were going to build an entire full stack system from markets to key management to users to having like a beautiful mobile app and all these things. And I think it's really hard to do multiple things well. I think this goes for any industry, but in particular in crypto. I think it's much easier to do one thing absurdly well than multiple things at all. And that was an extremely important lesson for us, as we said, like, we're just going to be this composable product and we'll build like an interface that's like whatever on top just to show people how it's supposed to work. But like, we want other people to build better interfaces. What Dharma's decision was, which is, if that's their one superpower, that's what they should do. And I think, you know, a lot of people building in the space can sort of hopefully learn a little bit from that. I'm a very true believer in like having like this like relentless, narrow focus on excelling at one thing. And on Ethereum and DeFi and other blockchain and DeFi and all these things, like you have this composability where you can focus on being the absolute best in the world at just one thing and making it open and, you know, able to be integrated by other teams, and then everyone wins. It's kind of like, you know, the concept of just open source libraries. Like, you know, we're building an open source library for like an interest rate for an asset. And that's it. That's at the end of the day, all Compound is. And so I think they just went through the same process. And at the time, yeah, they did some diligence. You know, before you jettison half your business, you know, you want to ask a few questions.
Sure.
And I just walked them through my vision, which was, you know, eventually Compound is going to be run by the users and the interfaces on top of it. Eventually an application like Dharma, you know, is going to wind up with a lot of control over the underlying protocol. I don't want to be the one running Compound. I want Dharma and Instadap and all of the different projects built on top of Compound to be the ones that maintain it and upgrade it. And, you know, I sort of shared that vision in like a very rough timeline. I said like, eventually, you know, I might've been like a little bit optimistic. I might've said by December of 2019, you know, we'll start to like test a token for governance and like upgradability. But I basically like shared the view and the vision that like eventually all the interfaces built on top of Compound would have the ability to like police it, make sure no one messes it up, and to be able to upgrade it. And I said it was, you know, I wanted them to be the ones running it. And they've actually like very early on taken a pretty active role in the governance of the protocol since we started to hand off control. They're able to make upgrades to it. They're able to participate in voting on it. It's the coolest thing I've ever seen, to be honest.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'm pretty sure like, you know, during 2017, everyone was writing the white papers and everyone just like said, yeah, like we'll have a DAO. Sure. Just like write a paragraph about it, you know, somewhere. And I think like for some reason, the DAO narrative has always been kept alive by, you know, the Ethereum ecosystem's fascination with it. And I almost feel like, you know, as the technology has matured and as we've better understood what DAOs can do and the capabilities of what they are, that reality is growing a bit more real. It's now in front of us. We have these functioning DAOs in the ecosystem now. We don't have this PTS DAO anymore, right? Why are you committed to this, you know, DAOification of Compound itself? Yes, we can crowdsource due diligence on proposals, kind of outsources it to those who have skin in the game. You get better ideas, great exposure. You want to get more people and eyes on ideas and changes to the protocol. But aside from that, you know, why is that important to Compound itself, both from a philosophical standpoint to even just like future vision and strategy? Like, you know, you mentioned that you aim to build products on top of Compound in addition. And I guess that does mean, you know, focusing or even creating separate divisions of focus, perhaps, right?
I believe that there's a lot of reasons why one might want to build a decentralized anything, right? Within crypto, everyone assumes that there's only one way something has to work or one way it has to look or whatever. And like, I think that narrative is horrific and bad and stupid. I think you should always find the reason and the use case for what you're trying to build. A lot of like applications could just be a database, right? A lot of applications might be best off if they're like completely decentralized, where there's like 100 billion nodes and they're all fighting to enforce the chain. Maybe like a layer one system like Bitcoin is best served by that. But with something like Compound, we actually started off by asking very openly, what is the best structure and why? And like, what are we actually trying to achieve? We're not trying to achieve complete equality in opinion. What we're trying to achieve with Compound is two things. One is censorship resistance, and the other is community upgradability. And everything we've done in designing the governance system is designed to achieve those two things and nothing else. And there's like a lot of room for it to like iterate and expand and morph in weird ways over time. But the way we sort of like distributed a token and the way we built delegation into it and the way we designed the actual like governance system where anyone can create proposals and anyone can like see them through is designed to achieve those two things. If someone comes to me and puts a gun to my head, I'm able to say, I have no ability to influence the protocol. Good luck, you know, smile at them and say like, shrug my shoulders. And I have no idea what you're talking about. I can't do anything. I don't have any special powers. And it's built to enable anyone, whether it's Dharma or, you know, a DAO or, you know, anyone in the community or Peter or whoever to say, I have a good idea. Listen to me. Let me upgrade Compound. And it's kind of like this custom DAO, so to speak. I don't like the word DAO, but it's a custom governance structure to achieve exactly that. It doesn't really do more than that. It doesn't really do less than that. And it's an extreme custom built structure. I don't know if over time we're going to see more custom governance structures or more general purpose ones or something in the middle, or I don't know. But it was meant to achieve those two goals. And, you know, there's a lot of people in the community who don't appreciate that. They're like, I've been using Compound for 4 days farming. How come I don't have as much say as you? Right?
Right.
And there's other people who are like, you know, have all sorts of opinions, but it's like, you know, you should start with like, what's the purpose of this?
Sure.
Compound's going to run forever. No one's going to be able to take it down. And the community's going to be able to upgrade it forever. And that's really cool. And that's the use case that we designed for.
That makes sense. They're not panamas, or they don't solve everything, but they can do things very well. And I think you have to be very specific about what you want these governance structures to do, right? You've shown a lot of disdain for like the ICO era and for like, you know, that sort of like behavior. I'm just like curious. Recently, I almost like say Compound, you know, the meme of yield farming is just, it's kind of hilarious. It's kind of funny, yes. Right? It's kind of amusing, right? And that you see a bunch of like Twitter accounts pop up, DeFi Karen, I don't know, almost like LARP and cosplay, this like new meme. While on one hand, it's like, it's definitely different in nature to the speculative hype and bubble of 2017. But in the same sense, we haven't seen such delinquency, let's say that, within the ecosystem in a while. How do you address like people calling this new DeFi yielding meme or this new craze being like the next bubble or a speculative craze? You know, how would you address that? Coming from a standpoint where you kind of helped incite it.
Yeah. So you said I showed a lot of disdain for ICOs, and I actually do. So I'll start by explaining why I have a little bit of disdain for ICOs and like why I think this might be a speculative excitement, but like it's very different. So To rewind a little bit, you know, ICOs in a lot of ways were people with no or little track record telling the community to trust them, give them a bunch of money, and then they'll deliver on an extremely complex crypto project. This is wrong in so many ways. One is that in general, like, you know, the public is not good at assessing claims like this. Two, you know, teams were raising huge amounts of money before building something, showing that they could. So there was like a reversal of incentives. You know, a lot of teams were just saying like, well, we already achieved our goals. We're sitting on tens of millions of dollars. Let's go on vacation. And it didn't lead to a lot of projects that actually delivered. So I think over the last like 2 to 3 years, we found better models, which is teams, you know, raised from professional investors generally, not always, right? They build something, it works, there's traction. At the end of that, you say, well, how do we hand this off to the community in some way? How do we make ourselves, you know, redundant to the process and make it distributed and like unkillable and all these superpowers that crypto is meant to create. And so I think that's like the backdrop. So now let's look at yield farming and like all of this. So there's a couple pieces to it. And I think the two primary pieces are, one, it's a token distribution mechanism. It's a way to distribute governance and votes and influence and a say. And two, it's an incentive mechanism. And these are both occurring after a project like Compound's already live, including a project like Balancer. And there's going to be 100 other projects that go into like yield farming or whatever. But it's a way to distribute governance of those systems. And it's a way to tie the usage of those systems to receiving these rights. Oftentimes, you're not asking people to give you their hard-earned money for you to go off and build something. It's like the opposite order. It's we've built something and now like please use it. But I think it's like much more virtuous in terms of like the goals of what crypto is supposed to be. Is there going to be a speculative mania with yield farming and other projects doing this? Probably. I wouldn't be surprised if projects earlier and earlier and earlier in their life cycle start distributing some sorts of governance tokens. You know, I could see people doing this on spreadsheets, you know, and it winds up going back to like an ICO like era where it's like, we haven't built anything, please participate again. But I can see it over time becoming like more and more perverse. But I could also see it the opposite way, like over time, more established organizations start to adopt these like economic structures. One day you might, with every pair of Nike shoes, get like a Nike governance token or something.
Right. Or, you know, in your neighborhood, you buy bread from your baker.
Right.
You get
it's
some
like loyalty,
you know,
points.
Exactly. It's like you stake your family members or children into a school.
Exactly.
You know, and then you liquidity mine like in university.
Exactly. I mean, it's a way of aligning in some ways, like who has a say on the future of a project with who's involved with it, right? That's it. And so we're going to see so many experiments here. Like, I do think we're like setting off like a very early chapter of a new wave of experimentation. I think we're going to see 100 different approaches, some of which will work phenomenally and a lot of which will crash and burn and, you know, we'll be back to square one. But I think there's going to be a lot of like really interesting work ahead.
I guess with the ICO boom, like, you know, it started with like Golem as a research project running out of money and being like, well, how do we like raise money? It's like ICO, what do we have to lose? It's basically nothing. I think Org was actually first. I guess even like arguably modest back then, you know, compared to the height of the boom. And then everyone started taking note, like the Gnosis sale. It was like, wait a minute. Something's up here.
Right.
It's like, huh. And I almost allude that Synthetics was like kind of the earlier ones that kind of like experimented with like these token liquidity mining models. But, you know, it was like, oh, okay, it kind of works. I guess some of the hardcore, you know, DeFi users did pick up on it. They were like participating in it. They would kind of try to game SNX rewards. But it's like, I think the Pandora's box definitely has been open to some extent.
Well, it has. And what's funny is like, you know, I recently tried to give, you know, kudos to all the teams that were an inspiration to Compound on our journey so far. I love Kane and Synthetics. He and Synthetics and Bitcoin itself and its mining rewards, I do attribute to like opening the Pandora's box of how do you use economic incentives to get the activity that you want. It's extremely powerful, right? Bitcoin honestly is the first economic incentive alignment tool, right? Like mining rewards are the way that you get people to do what you want. It's kind of magical in its simplicity. Like, I don't want to say like anyone besides Satoshi like legitimately invented how to like use the economic incentives in those ways. And before that, there's like Keynesian economics and all sorts of good stuff. But it's extremely effective because it allows you to essentially take future value and bring it into the present to help build the future value again. And it works.
My personal, like, you know, concerns are like, you know, a lot of the projects that are experimenting with liquidity mining, they all kind of started, you know, during 2017, you know, or earlier or around that period. They've had like, you know, 2-3 years to like iterate, build the stuff, you know, find product market fit, and then you know, maybe adding the special sauce right on top. I'm comfortable just to perhaps see, you know, some recklessness, you know, emerge in the ecosystem. Maybe not even reckless. It'll start off as creativity for sure. Right. And then, you know, the lines blur between that. And I think like there are definitely some ethical considerations of like how early should you be incentivizing people to put funds in your, you know, smart contract and I guess undertake the risk. I guess projects have like gone on to like sponsor Nexus Mutual, you know, say insurance, Ampleforth have done. that's a good like ethical kind of boundary. But how do you think about the ethics of liquidity mining in the coming craze, I guess?
Yeah. So I'll start off more generally talking about the ethics of, I think, building a financial application, because I think a lot of people in the space get it very wrong. There's a startup ethos of like move fast and break things. And when you're dealing with money, I don't think that applies. And when you're dealing with other people's money, it especially doesn't apply. I think many teams in this space get this wrong and they move too quickly and they don't have the passion for safety, security, and stability that I think is necessary for a lot of tools. And it's because it always comes at a cost. You have a choice between growth and safety. And if you don't have any users, you want growth. And so a lot of teams don't want to move slow. They don't want to move safe. And they focus on growth, period. And I think it's extremely dangerous. I think a lot of people need to slow down. I think a lot of users need to demand more. I think investors need to demand more. I think a lot of people need to question what's happening just in terms of building financial applications, right? I think everyone out there has a fiduciary and moral obligation to users not to lose people's money. And I think a lot of teams have messed this up. Compound V1, it was like a year of building, you know, before we like were willing to release something. And maybe we're too conservative, right? Or maybe we're just the conservative enough, right? But I think in general, with building financial applications with other people's money involved, you have to slow down. So that's the first piece. The second piece comes to liquidity mining. If you've achieved all of that, if you have been safe and you have moved slow and it's usable by users and you feel good and you feel like you're able to wave in usage, great. But if you haven't, then it's even more irresponsible because then you're basically incentivizing people to use an unsafe application. And that's even worse, right? So I think if you get the first piece right, it tees up the question for like, should you be incentivizing usage? It's like an amplifier. You're either amplifying something that's safe or you're amplifying something that's unsafe. I can guarantee you at a certain point, some team is going to amplify an irresponsible and unsafe piece of code, and it is going to be an absolute nuclear disaster.
It's top of mind and like almost a paranoia of mine. There's so much progress going on. It's great. We're doing this kind of right, you know, in the ecosystem. And, you know, it kind of takes not a lot to kind of undo the progress that the space has been has made, right? And, you know, just like see greed take over the ecosystem all over again. I guess you angel invest, right, as well, through Vote. If you design like, you know, a robot ventures incubator or compound, you know, ecosystem incubation, right, or whatever, you know, what would that like school of incubation for Web3 and DeFi projects look like? You mentioned this like trade-off, right, between growth and, you know, security. With early compound days, right, with V0, you kind of try to validate this concept by building something quicker. How would you structure like a potential incubator if you, like a hypothetical one?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, another key thing to appreciate though is V0 never saw real money.
Correct.
Right. So, you know, if I had an incubator, you know, the message would be simple. Do one thing extremely well and extremely safe and build it in such a way that if it works, it's going to scale and it can scale and you're ready to scale. And people shouldn't invest months and months and months into untested ideas unless they're really confident in them. Like, a lot of people want to invent something completely new, like out of left field. And like usually those experiments don't go anywhere. And so it's not a good fit for have a laser focus and build it with extreme quality and then, you know, able to be scalable. You know, make sure you know that you're building the right thing. Whether it's by like, you know, knowing so much about the space and being such a power user that you see an opening, or by like trying a bunch of things without real money. Like people don't realize that you can like test half of these apps with the database. Right? You don't have to build all this stuff on chain necessarily. And so my message would be, you know, the projects that I invest in and like to see and like want to help nourish are ones that have like a very simple and narrow focus and are going to pull it off and aren't trying to boil the ocean and they're not trying to, you know, do too much.
I'm personally someone who likes having a plan, really trying to understand, you know, not maybe over planning, but, you know, really trying to scenario plan and, you know, understand what you don't know and what the risks, identifying those, seeing what you don't know, right? I see a similar, you know, approach that you take. You're very methodical in that sense, it seems, right? But there's this other, you know, narrative within, I guess, the Web3 space where it's like, you know, you need to be good at memes or creating memes, right? To be like a successful DeFi founder, right? I mean, look at Sergey of Chainlink. Look at his goddamn, you know, Link Marine army. I'm just curious, like, how do you reconcile the odd quirks of Web3 itself? You know, I even joke like VentureDAO should like go fight for set up a workshop for founders to figure out how to get 4chan to invest into you. because it's like, you know, even though it's like you don't want to rely on these like crazy mishaps, right, of like 4chan memeing you into existence, it is, you know, undoubtedly a force to be reckoned with. So how do you think about this?
I think memes are great at communicating ideas before they exist, right? You know, and that goes for a lot of different concepts. That goes for politics, that goes for crypto projects. Like memes, you know, are storytelling and it gets people excited. And like, you can have meme product market fit before you have actual product market fit. Chainlink still doesn't have like actual staking and slashing and like validation of oracles. Like, guess what? Like, that's still a total meme and it has been for years. It's like a partial system, right? Everyone like is memed into like knowing how it's going to work one day, even though it doesn't work that way. And I think that's extremely powerful because it's like, it's a way of telling a story before something exists. The opposite side of the coin is building something and having it be like a fully functional system and not needing the meme, like where it's like, oh no, this, like it works, like go use it. This is it. Compound is on the one side of we're bad at memes. We're like, here's the product, you know, like this is how it works. Here's the documentation for it. Here's the like economics of it. Go use it. And they're two totally different approaches and they both work, right?
Yeah.
And I think some team is going to figure out how to combine the two in some freakish way, have like absurd off the charts growth. And like, we'll see some like crazy DAO emerge that like, you know, conquers the world or something.
Funny story is like, you know, I talked to one of the Link Marines who was there, you know, at the start of like Chainlink, right? And the start of the pre-sale or the say public sale, the minimum was 100 ETH. So most people didn't have 100 ETH. So what the business like section of 4chan kind of did was someone wrote smart contracts that no one really validated how secure they were or what it did. And Poof just kind of used those smart contracts to pull the funds together to invest into Chainlink. Somehow, like, they self-organize in like this very DAO-like hive manner to invest into Chainlink, and suddenly a bunch of 4chan folks had like skin in the game, right? And then, you know, the rest is history. But it was just like, I talked to one of them and it was like frightening that I was like, did anyone like check the smart contracts? It's like, you know, for like security, did it work? It's like, no, we just pressed the button, got our tokens, it was cool. Just fun side story. I think patience is going to be a virtue in light of any sort of like sentiment or craze. Personally, I have the view is like, it's not going to be the same as 0 and 17 because it's like, you actually have to have like stuff that works, you know? And those are longer cycles. It's a shift in tone for sure. I alluded to like, you know, those movies in zombie apocalypse and in a zombie apocalypse where like, you know, someone gets pregnant and they're giving a child and like, hooray, there's a child born in the midst of like this chaos. We have to protect it. And I almost feel like these are initial emerging points of, I guess, data points of validation for like the things that DeFi cares about. Recapping off this call, like, what advice would you give to new kind of DeFi builders today entering to hackathons? You know, perhaps just thinking like, hey, you know, DeFi seems hot. Should I build? Imagine if you talk to yourself, that 2011 version of you who just like stumbled into the room. It's like, what's DeFi? I should build something in DeFi.
So, to take good advice from someone else, I mean, I think it always starts with like the Paul Graham answer, build something that people want. I think that advice always has to come first. If you're not building something that people want, you're wasting your own time and there's nothing that's more valuable than the limited creative bandwidth that you have. So rule number one is just build something that people want. I think from there, rule number two is once you know what people want, reverse engineer it. Have your vision of what it's going to be. It's really hard to like ship that right out of the gate. You might have to work in pieces, right? And there's validation along the way. What the like sort of chunks are that you can like ship and like get out there and like work towards, similar to what we did at Compound. And lastly, like understand that crypto is totally crazy. The highs are high and the lows are low and there's everything in between and it's scary and it's intense and it's fun and it's weird. it's not like any other industry. It's extremely new. It's extremely merciless. And it moves really fast. And that can be like the greatest thing on earth or the worst thing on earth. So you have to be comfortable with it no matter what it winds up being.
Makes sense. Thanks for jumping on the podcast, the Wizard of Dapps podcast. Any last comments? Anything you want to shout out?
Yes. So I encourage everyone to experiment and get weird with compound governance. Build a DAO, delegate to Peter or delegate to a DAO, amass some votes, you know, try some fun things. This is like a working system that's designed to have low barriers of entry to participate in some way. Even if it's a DAO that votes no on everything or like something fun, get into it, right? This is like fertile ground to test out, you know, ideas against a billion-dollar protocol. And it's out there and it's open and there's no off switch. So have fun.
If you enjoyed what you listened to and are interested in supporting this podcast, then please follow us on Twitter at Wizard of Dapps. The show notes will be on our website. And if you want to continue the conversation, join our Telegram group. All links will be in the episode description. Thanks for listening.